You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Ken Jacobs. Ken, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you.
What are you reading right now?
A book called Out of the Picture, which is about and words of Milton Resnick, the painter Milton Resnick, R-E-S-N-I-C-K, Milton Resnick in a New York school. And the book is put together, transcribed, compiled, and edited by Joffrey Dorfman, D-O-R-F-M-A-N. And the book is put out by Mid-March Arts Press. So Milton Resnick at some point was able to buy a defunct synagogue on Lower East Side and fixed up his former wife with another defunct synagogue right next door, or right in front of it. Mm. And they both painted there. And he lived to at least 86 when he suicided. He shot himself with his service revolver. He had fought in World War II, a GI, for 5 years. And, of course, that and a depression fixes his personality after that. So he was always very combative and difficult and not all brilliant, but I wouldn't say rational.
Mm. Yeah, I think also brilliant painter. Yeah, fantastic painter. He was, and that's fascinating to hear about that.
I'm glad you know of him. Good, because he did step out of the picture. He literally stepped out of the picture that was being made for Life magazine of the New York school. A favorite word of his, I got to use it, is bullshit. And he said that was bullshit. And this photograph was going to lift some people and drop other people, which it did. And they had all been chums, at the cheap cafeterias. And he did not want to participate.
It's great to hear. Yeah, it sounds like a great book. And so let's talk about what you're working on now, or what you're thinking about, because we could go back to past work. There's a number of things I wouldn't mind discussing. But what are you working on now? What are you doing at the moment?
I'm doing shorter pieces, working with our daughter Nisi, who is who really understands the computer. I mean, I sit there and watch her and say certain things every so often, but I mostly watch her in awe that she can do these things. I was very involved in three-dimensional illusion. At a certain point, this no-no, this bad thing, illusion, got me, and I never let go of that.
That was as far back as the Gift of Fire, right? When you got very interested, or before that?
Lee's Bridge. Even before that, yes, even before that. My wife Flo is here, and she remembers things. So we say this started with me with 1968. Flo sent me to a drugstore right near the Brooklyn Bridge. We've been living near the Brooklyn Bridge for a long time on the Manhattan side. She sent me to the store to get something, and when I was at the counter, I saw this sign that said C3D, CTV in 3D, $1. And I smirked the way anyone, trained by our society would smirk, walked out and circled back and plunked down a dollar. We had very few dollars, and Flo was not happy with that. But I spent a lot of time with these pair of glasses that did not work well, but at some point I was able to deduce something. I saw a ticket tape parade taking place a few blocks away from us, and I, it was unmistakably in 3D. The ticker tape rolling through the sky. And then Jonas Mekas gave me a book. Flo, name of the book. Eye and Brain by
H.L. Gregory.
Eye and Brain by H.L. Gregory. And in that book, one of the things, one of the many things he covers is the Pulfrich effect, P-U-L-F-R-I-C-H, and which you can look up online, which is a miracle, an amazing, amazing thing to discover, which is that if a dark filter is held in front of one eye, light reaching that eye will be slowed down, diminished, but also slowed down. So the eye that's seeing, the eye that's not looking through a filter sees the present, and the eye that's looking through the filter is seeing the immediate past. And what this meant for me was that one could look at a film and see two frames, the present one and the past one. And if they fell in the right configuration, the relationship between the two frames could be somewhat like the relationship between the two points of view of the eyes, two perspectives, and therefore three-dimensional space could be produced.
That's fascinating, and of course that's quite different than the way stereopticons are made. But you're talking about we're separating the right and left eye somehow.
Yeah, right. This meant many movies could be seen in 3D, cartoons, all kinds of things, newsreels could be seen in depth, and depth had been made very important to me by studying with Hans Hofmann, the painter Hans Hofmann, who continually spoke about depth and insisted that one respect the picture plane. So one had to indicate this depth, but not actually create it. So it was a wonderful frustration to be introduced to. Okay,
right.
I was caught up in cinema from the very beginning, and also studying cinema at the same time as studying painting. Now I could create this illusion of depth, this amazing break from the surface. And although Hofmann had warned this was a sin, you had to respect the surface, I plunged into it.
But that's a painter's issue, isn't it? The surface also. I mean, the surface could certainly be broken in painting that have different kinds of depth, but that's also, isn't that more of a painter's issue? Because film seems destined to have depth, that just as photography, it's isn't it about depth in some way?
The 2D image is enamored of depth. It always wants to show depth, but it can't unless you have a 3D movie, a 3D technical setup. And yes, you're right. It is a painter's concern, and paint is still what I'm focused on somehow. I mean, yesterday, Flo is another painter, and yesterday we had the idea to look up abstract expressionist lectures. And this on the amazing computer, there they are. There's all, I mean, you hear the voices of de Kooning, all kinds of people talking about their work in the 50s and 60s. So that should be a lead to young people that want to hear the voice of the guys who actually did, the women too, who actually did the work.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So when we look back at really the history of let's say depth in cinema, 3D in cinema, you know, it almost seems to take off. We've all been to 3D movies, but then it seemed to go out of fashion, then it came back in, and to look at that cumulative history and what you're doing right now, it's different but drawing from that history, right? I mean, I'm kind of just saying, how do we sum up what's happened with 3D and what you're experimenting with right now?
Okay. Good question. I'm not involved with story. Our son Azazel is in Hollywood. He's involved with story, and I like his story films. But I'm involved with phenomena, and the act of seeing itself, which I think might have been a title of Stan Brakhage's, one of his books or something.
Film, the film of the autopsy. What wasn't it?
Yes.
On the act of seeing with one's own eyes, I think.
Very, very wonderful. So these things which are important to meet up with don't take you into story. And story is important, but it's something else. And you even know when you're looking at a real documentary, this is something that has happened. This is not a story. These are not actors. Acting is a wonderful art. Theater is, and even film theater is great, but it's not my interest. So I'm interested. I would have to say the act of seeing what there is to see, what there is to understand, but direct experience with the things of this world.
And I understand that. I was actually thinking we should talk about Star Spangled to Death and a little bit of your specific approach, but I think most people know that, but we could talk about that. So, but still, with three dimensions, dealing with 3D, just as you talked about that, plunking down the dollar and looking through that, as you're looking at phenomena now and ways of seeing, we've talked a lot about phenomena that you're working on now as an experimental filmmaker.
Oh, okay. You mentioned Star Spangled Death.
I mentioned Star Spangled Death, but also I mentioned Star Spangled Death and want to discuss that because that seems to be such an entry for people to understand how you're thinking about phenomena, ways of seeing, and not storytelling in a typical way.
But I was in my 20s when I made that movie, and that movie was an immediate response to the screwed up world we were living in then. I was thinking about depth in terms of organizing things and people within the frame. I've been very, very impressed by the painter Max Beckmann, and I couldn't help but move towards the kind of compositions he created in his paintings. But I had no thought of illusion. If anything, I wanted to break our political, social illusions. And so this is something that we recently saw the film again, Star Spangled Death, and I'm very proud of it. I'm very glad to have made it. What happened? I guess I had the illusion that I'd taken care of my political responsibilities, and now maybe despair helped. I could go deeper into this phenomena that basically interested me, and
which is in a sense moving further away, you're saying, from any kind of storytelling, an area that's much more formal, much more experimental, and purely non-narrative.
Right, because Star Spangled to Death plays the story. It's a story and it's not a story. And then there's another long film I made soon after that called The Sky Socialist, which I'll put it out soon. The Sky Socialist, and that is also involved with story, but also not involved with story. It also it winks at the audience and says, "We know this is a story, but the real world is going on around the story. The real world permeates the story. The story is about the real world. Let's see the reality of people acting as the story is told." Okay, so it was sometime after that, 68, that I found this device, and it pulled me into illusion. Illusion is such a bad word. Illusion is wonderful. We love illusion. We love illusion. But it's important to recognize that it's illusion. Working with illusion for many years, 20, 30 years of performing with projectors, Flo and I moving around like, you know, gypsies, doing these performances which made three-dimensional things happen, abstract three-dimensional things. I worked out a method by which it was possible, working with two-dimensional technology, to create three-dimensional events on screen. And so that's what's been grabbing me these last few years, and what I work with at the computer with our daughter Nisi.
And can you talk a little bit about how that happens technically, how you're employing that to make a kind of dimensionality or depth happen?
I'm sure that I was at Yale. I'm sure we were at Yale with our projectors performing, and to most people it was just weird. We were crazy people, obsessed, and they weren't used to tasting this phenomena, getting any kind of substance from it, and it would just be, I think, a weird thing, one more weird thing in a world of weird things. But we were after this stuff, and finally working with these two projectors, I was able to get to the simple core of what this phenomena was, and bring it over to actually structuring a film or a video using that formula,
So the formula of using multiple projectors in a room to achieve a kind of a different kind of effect.
Yes, it evolved into one frame after another on a single strand of film, one image after the other on a ongoing video. Something very important was the way Flo's reminded me to mention, the way our two projectors alternated images. In the beginning, I worked out a technique where there would be no black between the alternating images, and later on introduced a black space, and the black space was magic.
And what was the purpose of the magic?
What had been a kind of stunted 3D, looking like flat planes in depth. They were definitely in depth, but with the black space, one saw rotundity. One saw the curved volumes of objects. One really saw objects as they appear, and not like flat cutouts. Following that, soon after that, I did a work called Cherries, which is XCXHXE, and so on. And it was from a French pornographic film from the, I would say, late 1920s, in which the figures appear in 3D. Mm. And people love that work and ask me to revive it, and I hope someday I will.
Well, to show it, how is that work shown? That has to have a special projection system?
Flo and I were on each side of these two projectors aimed at the screen in the same space on the screen, filming the screen. And the turning shutter in front alternated images from this projector or that projector. We were using two prints of the same film, usually very slightly out of sync with each other, one frame or two frames ahead, or on one or two frames lagging on the other, And this gave us changes within the recorded image that could be exploited for depth phenomena.
And to ask you one question that we've, in a way, gone over a bit, but just in your film, Star Spangled to Death, where is that scene? Because you've seen it not that long ago. It's a seven-hour film. Can people see that somewhere now? How is that watchable for an audience of interest?
Well, it's on video, and they can order video from us, right? For how much?
$70
for four DVDs, and they're wonderful.
Yeah. Okay, so wonderful. Yeah, they'll be linked.
I'm
to
looking
that
at the work of my younger self, and I'm impressed.
Yeah,
and the movie really means it. You know, there's no question that it is vehement in what it's showing and what it's saying.
And you've seen so much in film, and you're doing these other works now. It sounds very exciting, and both of you and Flo sound like you have a very vibrant life as working artists who are, it sounds like, collaborating as well as continuing to paint and make work. Is that the case?
It is absolutely the case. Unfortunately, we're surrounded as we step out on the streets, and I can't tell you how many people are begging in the streets of New York right now, how many people are sleeping in the streets of New York right now. It's, you know, really horrible. So when we come back and do this work, it's avoidance of a reality. And the reality should say, do something about this reality. And I try. I have a work called Seeking the Monkey King. Seeking the Monkey King, in which you'll see these what I call these eternalisms, this churning 3D blinking phenomena at the service of telling something, not a story, but making a statement. That's a 39-minute work, and it's on Vimeo Ken Jacobs. Anyone can go to it and see it. And you can see it on any monitor, on any 2D monitor. And this 3D sounds like nothing, compared to what the movie is about. But that's the territory it takes place in.
So you mean it's contemporary and it feeds off what you were just saying. We live in a world, and New York is in the state that it's in, and more homeless than ever. And this country is run by a bullying tyrant. We're in a very unusual situation. And you've seen the Vietnam War and so much that happened. It's quite
it,
a role
it
we
led to this.
Now, really.
Yeah. It led to this. The invasion of Iraq. Built on on lies. So this country has been sadly corrupt for a long time. This guy is the climax.
And what happens after him, you think?
I hate to think, but I do the work as a kind of insect activity. I love it. It keeps me from going nuts, and I work at it.
What is that? What do you mean an insect activity? What do you mean by that exactly?
It's just activity. It's just like motor activity. I keep running. I keep operating. And if I look around too much, if I think too much, I really could blow the whole works. I mean, it's unbearable. So I have a hobby that keeps me going. I do want to do some things about it. Our daughter Nisi is very involved online doing things. Some of the works do make statements, but the statements going out to other frustrated people because we're at the mercy of a countrywide cult right now. Forever Trump, the man who can do no wrong.
Absolutely, and as you're saying, you know, this kind of busy work, which is I mean, you're calling it a hobby, but you know, you're an artist, and Flo is an artist, and you guys are continuing to paint and make film. That's also a contribution to the world, isn't that? Do you see that as a part of? And I'm not trying to just, you know, work its way into this, but what is artist's role here? It isn't to make art almost a form of resistance as opposed to something else. I mean, it seems like there's nothing we can do, but art is something, isn't it? Or do you, or no?
I absolutely agree with you. If we survive, if human culture survives, and will it? We don't know. If this guy gets away from the Mueller investigation, there's no we've got a dictator.
Absolutely,
he's the biggest fuck up there's ever been. He wants to be, and he will destroy everything. And so all this art, all this amazing brain work that people do in all kinds of fields will be for naught.
So as an artist in that context, you know, because of course I agree with you, it's very, very extreme, disturbing situations. Artists, you know, there's been dictators before. There's been horrible figures like him before. You know, we all know who they are. What does an artist do? Isn't there a role still to the arts under, you know, kind of tyrannical regimes that are oppressive and murderous? Still?
Yes, because
you're not going to survive.
Because I mean, art is a way of life, and you want to live until you die. You want to live until it's called off for you. You hope that your kids go on. You hope that life goes on after your own finite existence. Now we don't know. This idiot has the whole creation of a nuclear arsenal was insane to begin with. It was insane. And this insane schmuck is out of controls. It's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. It's good to be able to laugh about it because it is so insane. Before we go, is there anything else you want to say about your work? People, there'll be links in here to your to you and your website where people can buy the films and everything else. But is there anything else you want to say or that I should have asked? Or
okay, the only thing is that some people are exceptionally sensitive to flicker, and there's a form of flicker over here. There's alternation of images. It isn't really flicker, but it's boom, 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 and it's something that overrides whatever they're seeing. It's just an ongoing, I would call it dynamic phenomena. And some people, very few, can't take that. If one looks and gets even a hint of reaction, I would stop. I had a student, very nice student. I showed the movie Flicker by Tony Conrad. And she really became sick. She left, and I never saw her again. So I don't want that to happen for anybody. So if you're ultra sensitive to this alternating image, sorry, it's not for you. But there's a lot of other things out there.
Well, Ken, I want to thank you, and also Flo, I know is right there. Thank you for talking with me today. I really appreciate talking about your work and what you're doing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.